believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome, everyone, to the 2A Radio Show right here on Republic Broadcasting. It's great to be here with you today. Hope your yesterday was wonderful. Hope your today is even better. You can always hear us streaming online at republicbroadcasting.org, the main site for the network. As well, if you listen to Republic Broadcasting, you usually will find that you get some really great programming that's out there. If you'd like to help spread the word, there's an easy way you can do it. Help out the network. Help out the people that are in your level of influence, all right? Some of your friends, family, maybe coworkers. You can get some generic Republic Broadcasting business cards and hand those out. For 100 of them, it costs $8. That includes shipping. You also get a bumper sticker you can put on the back of your car, or maybe put it on the back of a car of somebody who's incredibly liberal that drives you nuts, and hopefully they won't see it. They can go around advertising for the more conservative-minded folks. If you'd like to order that, there's a couple of options. You can call 800-724-2719, and that would be Monday through Friday, 9 to 6 Central Time. Or you can mail it in, and that would be to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, Suite 302. That's Republic Broadcasting's address. In Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Additionally, if you want to call on the show, it's 800-313-9443. However, we do have a full schedule today. You can always email me, bill@2aradio.com. Now, 2A Radio, I've been in the process of working behind the scenes. There's not much up on it. By middle part or end of this week, it should be up and going well, including archives of the show, links to be able to listen to us live, both streaming and MP3, as well as podcast links, a little bit more information about me, some pictures with me and doing some training and whatnot. You'll be able to see all of that at 2aradio.com. I would also like to encourage everyone to listen to my good friend and the guy that really got me started in this business, Dave Champion, on the Dave Champion Show. Now, Dave Champion can be heard right here on Republic at 3 p.m. Central Time. It's 1 o'clock West, 2 o'clock in the Mountain Time Zone, 3 o'clock Central, 4 o'clock Eastern. Afternoons, Monday through Friday. I got my start with Dave. He allowed me to sit in for him when he used to be on a different network back a year or so ago. And that's where I got my start on radio. Somebody told me I had the gift of gab. As a matter of fact, John Statmiller right here at RB, and I want to thank him very much for the opportunity. We have a number of things to go through today, so I hope you're going to enjoy what we've got coming up. Now, we're going to entertain some information about what's going on around the states, because a lot of the legislative sessions are coming to an end. Additionally, there's a lot of stuff going on federally. We're going to talk again. The major assault on our rights right now is the provocation that the administration has decided to get in on us when it comes to this just line of garbage about American guns being responsible for Mexican drug cartel violence on the U.S.-Mexico border. So we will address that as well. Matter of fact, that seems to come up just about every day. So stay tuned, and we'll talk after the break.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, welcome back from the break. I have an audio file I'd like to play for you, which was an interview with CBS's Katie Couric and Attorney General Eric Holder on guns and detainees, Guantanamo. Listen to this.
Attorney General Eric Holder had a warning today for federal prosecutors in the wake of the Ted Stevens case. He said their job is not to convict people or to win cases, but to do justice. Holder is trying to clean up the tarnished image of the Justice Department he inherited. And in a wide-ranging and exclusive interview, I asked this country's chief law enforcement officer about the many challenges he faces. He recently returned from Mexico, where violence between a handful of warring drug cartels fighting over control and supply routes is increasingly threatening this country. So far, 230 U.S. cities have been infiltrated by Mexican gangs. Following his visit, he pledged greater U.S. cooperation with Mexican authorities. How concerned are you, Attorney General Holder, about corruption within the ranks of law enforcement in Mexico?
Well, that's clearly a problem, and the Attorney General of Mexico will tell you that. When you have that amount of money that's flowing through any country, it has an impact or has the potential to have an impact on society generally, and law enforcement is no different.
But that does make cooperation pretty challenging.
Well, it makes it challenging but not impossible, and we've come up with ways in which we are able to share intelligence with those who are with us in these battles against these narco traffickers.
What about reinstating the assault weapons ban and closing the gun show loophole? Do you think that would stop the flow of weapons into Mexico from the U.S.?
Well, I think the thing that we need to do is come up with those things that we can do right away, and we're going to be moving 100 ATF agents to the border, about 26 DEA agents to the border, and that'll happen over the course of the next 30 days or so. And I think that'll have a pretty dramatic impact on reducing the flow of weapons into Mexico.
But another major issue is guns being purchased and used in this country. Given a recent series of mass shootings from southern Alabama to upstate New York have killed 57 people. While the Attorney General said he supported reinstating the assault weapons ban during his confirmation hearing, he's been silent on the subject since. Did someone tell you to back off?
No, no one's told me to back off. I understand the Second Amendment. I respect the Second Amendment. I think we need to use common sense tools to keep the American people safe.
It's been reported that Democrats on Capitol Hill are getting increasingly chummy with the NRA and receiving more campaign contributions from that organization than in previous years, and nobody wants to get the NRA riled up. So has this become political at all?
No, I don't think it has. In fact, I look forward to working with the NRA to come up with ways in which we can use common sense approaches to reduce the level of violence that we see in our streets and make the American people as safe as they possibly can be.
What about gun shows? In over 30 states, people can simply walk into gun shows and buy a gun, sometimes from unlicensed dealers, without a background check. Would you support closing the gun show loophole?
Well, again, these are issues that we'll have to discuss. The president will be the one who will ultimately set policy, things that are politically saleable and things that will ultimately be effective.
Does the closing the gun show loophole fall into those categories?
Well, that'll be one of the things I'll talk about with the president.
Another thorny issue on the AG's plate, where to put the approximately 250 detainees currently being held in Guantanamo, among them five who have been charged as co-conspirators in planning 9/11. Is there any chance that some of the high-value detainees, I believe there are 14 of them currently in custody, will be transferred to U.S. prisons?
It's hard to say. At this point, we are, again, making these individualized determinations, and it's not clear where any of the detainees will ultimately end up. But what we will make sure we do is that the American people will be safe with regard to whatever decisions that we make.
Many of the cases are complicated by the fact they involve classified information that could compromise national security if discussed in open court. Despite that, for the first time, Holder said Article III or federal courts will likely handle a number of high-profile, politically sensitive trials.
Yes, we will bring, I think, a substantial number of those people who we decide to charge in Article III courts. Others might be taken to military courts, others perhaps to these military tribunals with some enhanced measures.
There is also the issue of the treatment of some of the detainees. For example, alleged 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. It's been reported that he was waterboarded. You have come out publicly and said waterboarding is torture. So how would that stand up in civilian court?
Well, that's one of the issues that we'd have to deal with, try to figure out exactly what we can do with detainees who have been subjected to these enhanced interrogation techniques and whether that poses a problem in bringing tribal cases.
Attorney General Holder also addressed recent criticism by former Vice President Cheney, who said the Obama administration was making choices that will raise the risk of another terrorist attack.
Well, I think that's totally false. It's inconsistent with the facts. If you look at what the president is doing, what this administration is doing in Afghanistan, what we're doing with regard to Guantanamo, I think the former vice president's remarks are way off the mark.
What do you think of him making those remarks to begin with?
Well, I would just say that I respect former President Bush and former Secretary of State Rice, who indicated that for at least some period of time, a period of silence and letting this administration try to determine what steps it's going to take is appropriate.
Are you implicitly saying that Dick Cheney was inappropriate and off base making those comments?
I'll let other people decide that.
Since Holder and the president are such good friends, I asked the attorney general how he'll maintain his independence. He told me he's a hard-headed lawyer and he expects to clash with the president at times. But Holder said the president understands how important it is for the Justice Department to operate without White House interference.
Does that interview leave any question at all where Katie Couric stands? How left-wing, how anti-gun, pro-socialist can you be in asking questions? Can you imagine the gun show loophole? I'm sorry, Katie, do you or any other of your numbskull talent, I don't want to call you journalist, I want to call you talent, because journalists do what they're supposed to do. Talent stands in front of the camera and starts talking. Do you have any idea what this gun show loophole is, or is it just a term that you continue to throw out? Something tells me you have absolutely no idea what this gun show loophole is. I'm going to go ahead and explain it to you. If there is a gun show where you can go and buy guns and ammo and whatnot, if there is someone there selling guns and they are a federal firearms licensee, they have to do, mandated by federal law, a background check before they can sell and release any firearms to that individual. This alleged loophole is if an individual person shows up there and sells their gun to another individual person. It's personal property. They happen to meet at a venue, like at a swap meet, and they can sell the guns. I can sell it to him. He can buy it from me. I can buy it from him. She can sell it to me. Whatever it is. And there are no background checks person to person. It just happens to be a convenient place where people can go to meet each other to do this and not spend money on things like newspaper ads or expose yourself to everybody out there on something like Craigslist. You could use gunbroker.com. That'll take you a week or more. If you have a gun show coming to town and you're a gun guy and other gun guys are going there, gun people, they can do private business there because that's where they come together. It would be like an art show. People that are interested in dealing with art and people that are interested in buying art go to an art show. This is a gun show. People who are interested in selling or buying the wares of firearms and accessories can go there and do that. It's not a loophole, you ignorant ass. I should say asses. It is a way to conduct private party individual business is guaranteed by the Constitution, and to try to make any law preventing it is unconstitutional. Do it, and eventually the NRA, Second Amendment Foundation, JFPL, Gun Owners of America will file lawsuits and smack it down eventually. So don't bother doing something that's stupid. Criminals don't go to gun shows and buy guns. Because there's too damn many good guys there that won't sell them anything. You don't think that we good guys who own guns and hold on to our rights can tell a bad guy when he comes up to us? You don't think we can do that? Do you think we're so stupid that you need to legislate us into some sort of higher understanding? No. You fear us, not the guns. And how about this whole thing from Eric Holder? I think Dick Cheney should shut the hell up, is essentially what he said. You know what? Dick Cheney can say whatever the hell he wants. He was vice president, the strongest vice president in the history of the United States, of all the vice presidents we had. Right? He ran the shadow government in a time of crisis. Did he go overboard? Yeah, you bet your ass he went overboard. But did he keep the country safe? Yes, he did. The whole freedom versus liberty thing is a difficult deal to deal with. But I got to tell you, he has every right to speak. The man's been involved in prior administrations. He's run companies. He's an intelligent guy. And if he wants to get up and say something, he can say whatever he wants. If the news doesn't want to air it, then they don't want to air it. Hell, they didn't air Ron Paul for the last 2 or 3 months of the primary season. And I'm sure he was talking to a lot of people. They just didn't want to listen. On Guantanamo Bay and the guys that are out there, we're not exactly sure what's going to happen yet. The president has said he wants to look at closing the place within a year. We'll see. Stick around, folks. There are some messages coming up, very important. Remember, you can always email me, bill@2aradio.com. We'll be right back.
Responsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
All right, folks, welcome back. Now, back in the Bill Clinton administration, we had the goofiest thing going on down in New Mexico at the National Nuclear Laboratories down there, where the Chinese were getting all kinds of secrets about technology and missiles and whatnot. And, of course, they proved to us that all of the stolen secrets are, or secrets that were made available to them through unconventional means, through the just unbelievable, just garbage Clinton administration. Again, one man talking here. They actually shot a satellite out of orbit a few months back to prove that they had our technology. How about that? So here is a piece about allegedly Russian and Chinese operatives having gotten their hands into the U.S. power grid. Listen to this.
Wall Street Journal reporting evidence that Chinese and Russian operatives have mapped out the U.S. power grid and planted little electronic time bombs along it. Exactly who is doing this and why? We turn to ABC News consultant, former presidential cybersecurity expert, Richard Clark. Thanks, Dick, for being with us this morning. So,
good morning.
What does this say to you? Who is this, and is this serious?
It's very serious. I think the government has known for several years that China and Russia and other countries have created offensive cyber war units and have penetrated American networks, including the electric power grid, which is pretty easy to penetrate. And that allows them, in a time of war or a time of crisis, to go in and shut off the electric power and to actually destroy generators throughout the United States. Congress has been informed about this. The Obama administration has been informed about this as well.
But what does this say to us about the Chinese in particular? Because there was another story in the New York Times recently that said the Chinese were subsidizing hackers to go into 103 countries, 1,300 computers, hack into them. What does it say about the Chinese and their adversarial relationship with the rest of the world?
Well, I wouldn't be sure that the Chinese are the only ones. I wouldn't be sure that the United States isn't doing the same sort of thing. Modern countries are creating cyber offensive warfare units. The thing is that you also have to do the defense. And the Obama administration, although it's been informed about this, has yet to make the necessary decisions to create a defense for our electric power grids and other vital systems. Congress is considering a bill by Senator Rockefeller, but the Obama administration yet hasn't made a decision.
So it can be prevented, and can you do anything about these little electronic time bombs already planted?
Well, one thing you can do is disconnect the power grid control system from the Internet. There's no reason for it to be connected. It would cost a lot of money to do that, but it also costs a lot of money if one day we woke up and we didn't have electric power.
We are in the 21st century, to be sure. Thanks so much. Good to have you with us, Richard Clark. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, how about that for a lack of homeland security? Who's the actual security of this country, and who's in charge of it? You know who's in charge of my security? Who's in charge of Bill Karn's security? Bill Karn's. I don't leave it up to the federal government. I don't leave it up to the state patrol. I don't leave it up to the county sheriff or the city police if I'm somewhere else. I don't leave it up to the little patrol guy in his little boogie cart in the community I live in. I don't leave it up to any of them. I leave it up to me. If I see something going down that doesn't look right, I'm going to get involved. I'll give you a perfect example. I live on a little cul-de-sac, and my street, there is no exit. You come up, you go back down. I saw a lady who was in a red SUV that a couple times I'd seen her drive around taking notes and going. On this, I think it was the third occasion I saw this, I stopped her, and I asked her, I said, "Who are you, and what are you doing on this street?" And she said, "I work for the Homeowners Association." I said, "All right, I'm going to ask you one more time, and I want you to answer the question that I ask. Who are you, and what are you doing on the street?" Again, she said, "I work for the Homeowners Association." My response is, "I don't care who your employer is. I want to know who you are, and I want to know what you are doing on my street." Because what it looks like is you're casing the place. You're driving slow, you're looking around, you're taking notes. I want to know what you're doing on my street. Because as it turns out, my street is privately owned. It's not public property. It's a privately owned area. So what ended up happening was she told me who she worked for, told me her name, told me that she was supposed to be driving around, writing down any potential violations of the CC&Rs. While she stood there, I got the name of her supervisor and the phone number. I called him up and I said, "Do you have this person? Does this person work for you?" "Yes." "What are they supposed to be doing right now?" "Well, they should be out at this subdivision, you know, looking for these violations." "Thank you. Is there a problem?" "There's not anymore. Thank you." And I hung up and I told her, "You can go now." And wow, you know what's funny? I've actually been outside my yard, my front yard, you know, doing whatever I was doing, two or three times, and I've seen this red SUV begin to pull up the street, and when she notices I'm there, turns back around and goes. So I didn't make any phone calls, I found out. Did I put myself in a little bit of risk? Yeah, possibly, but not really. The thing is, security belongs to us. We start leaving it up to other people, and it's not going to get done. Stick with us. We'll be back after these messages.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Karns. 1-800-313-9443.
Guns in the U.S. and the drugs and violence in Mexico, right across the border. Now, earlier you heard the recording of Attorney General Eric Holder talking about, what was it, I think 126 additional federal agents from two different agencies were going to be on the Mexican border. Now, pardon me, but 126 agents on a border that's 1,969 miles long, Pardon me if my math doesn't tell me that's one agent for every about 15 and a half plus miles. What the hell is that going to do? That's going to dramatically increase our protection on the border? You want to protect us on the border, close it. Now, the corruption in this episode is not solely that within Mexico. There's some on the American side. Let's listen to this news clip about just that.
Tonight we have a closer look inside the dangerous world of Mexican drug cartels from someone who knows them well. As we've reported, cartel violence is spreading into the United States. U.S. law enforcement has made the border fight a top priority. But as Terry Moran reports, in some cases, U.S. law enforcement can be a big part of the problem. Terry traveled to the center of some of the worst bloodshed, Ciudad Juarez, just across the border from El Paso.
In Juarez, the Mexican army patrols the streets in a city under siege from drug cartel. More than 2,000 murders in the past 14 months, a police force racked by corruption. And while the troop surge is working, the murder rate's been cut by more than half, the killing continues.
This happened within the last hour. There are two men executed on the sidewalk in this neighborhood. Two more casualties in the narco wars here.
The drug wars in Juarez are fought by thousands of combatants, like the one we met last week.
Did you kill people?
Sí.
Yes.
Many?
Para lo de Madera, unos 15.
At least 15.
¿Te pusieron mi vida o la de ellos?
It was my life or theirs.
This man, he wanted his identity masked, told us he worked for years for the powerful Juarez cartel as a hitman and a smuggler, all with the help of corrupt U.S. law enforcement officials.
You had six suitcases full of marijuana that you gave to a United States law enforcement officer?
Yes, in his hands. He put it in his truck and he drove it to Columbus.
The drug cartels, he claimed, have many U.S. officials on the payroll. It's a system. The corrupt U.S. personnel are known to the smugglers only by number, not by name. And they make sure they are on duty when they open the border for the smugglers.
If we see any other immigration officers, don't worry about it because we can just pretend that I've already detained you.
U.S. officials admit corruption by the drug cartels is sharply on the rise.
For them to be successful, they have to be able to get across the border, and they're willing to pay a lot of money in order to be able to grease the skids to do that.
The reason for the increase in corruption, it's getting harder to smuggle drugs because of more pressure from the Mexican government and more stringent U.S. border security. But more border agents also means more targets for bribes. And that means this war, now fought by the troops in Juarez, is a long, long way from over. Terry Moran, ABC News, Juarez, Mexico.
So it's not just a Mexican problem. It is also somewhat an American problem when it comes to bribes up and down the border. Now, I got to tell you, I still have an outstanding job offer to go to work for the U.S. Border Patrol as a Border Patrol agent. I just don't see myself wanting to be in my 50s and 60s running up and down the desert chasing illegal Mexicans throughout the Sonora Desert in Arizona or New Mexico. So I've declined. That being said, this has really vamped into anti-gun sentiment from Capitol Hill and the White House, wanting to take your guns and mine. The addition to that is these mass shootings that have gone on within this country. Some 53 people in the last few weeks have been killed in shootings of three or more people. Now, I'm going to read to you an open letter by Ann Coulter. You don't know who Ann Coulter is. I don't know how you could possibly listen to this show and not know who she is. I'll let you go to Google and check it out. Here it is. This is titled, Let's All Surrender Our Weapons, You First. Here it is. The rash of recent shooting incidents has led people who wouldn't know an AK-47 from a paintball gun to issue demands for more restrictions on guns. To be sure, it's hard to find any factors in these shootings that could be representable. I'm sorry, that could be responsible other than the gun. So far this year, public multiple shootings were committed by the following. Richard Popolowski, 23, product of a broken family, expelled from high school, and dishonorably discharged from the Marines, who killed three policemen in Pittsburgh. If you're dishonorably discharged from the military, that's like having a felony on your record and you cannot legally own a gun. Former crack addict Jillery Wong, 41, who told co-workers, quote, America sucks, yet somehow was not offered a job as a speechwriter for Barack Obama, who blockaded his victims in a civic center in Binghamton, New York, and shot as many people as he could before killing himself. Robert Stewart, 45, a three-time divorcee and high school dropout with, quote, violent tendencies, according to one of his ex-wives, who shot up the nursing home in Carthage, North Carolina, where his newly estranged wife worked. Lovell Mixon, 26, a paroled felon struggling to get his life back on track by pimping, who shot four cops in California before eventually being shot himself. And 28-year-old Michael McClendon, child of divorce, living with his mother and boycotting family funerals because he hated his relatives, who killed 10 of those relatives and their neighbors in Sampson, Alabama. It might make more sense to outlaw men than guns, or divorce, or crack, or prohibit felons from having guns, except we already outlaw crack and felons owning guns, and yet still somehow, Wong got crack and Mixon got a gun. After being pulled over from a routine traffic violation, Lovell Mixon did exactly what they teach drivers ed by immediately shooting four cops. Mixon's supporters held a posthumous rally in his honor, claiming he had shot the cops only in self-defense, which I take concludes the cop Mixon shot while the officer was lying on the ground. Again, letter by Ann Coulter. I guess Mixon also raped that 12-year-old girl in self-defense. Clearly, the pimping industry has lost a good man. I wish I'd known him. I tip my green velvet fedora with the dollar signs all over to him. Why do the good ones always die young? Pimps, I mean. Liberals tolerate rallies on behalf of cop killers, but they prohibit law-abiding citizens working at community centers in Binghamton, New York, from being armed to defend themselves from disturbed, crack-addicted American haters like Jillery Wong. It's something in liberals' DNA. They think they can pass a law eliminating guns and nuclear weapons, but teenagers having sex is completely beyond our control. The demand for more gun control in response to any crime involving a gun is exactly like Obama's response to North Korea's openly belligerent act of launching a long-range missile this week, Obama kept to action by calling for worldwide nuclear disarmament. If the SAT tests were used to determine how stupid a liberal is, one question would be, the best defense against lawless rogues who possess blank is for law-abiding individuals to surrender their own blank. Correct answer, guns. We would also have accepted nuclear weapons. Obama explained that the United States has a moral responsibility to lead disarmament efforts, because America is the only nuclear power to have used a nuclear weapon. In fact, it was an atomic weapon, slightly different than the actual nuclear weapons that we have now. Anyhow, so don't go feeling all morally superior to a country whose business model consists of exporting heroin, nuclear bombs, and counterfeit U.S. dollars, and of importing Swedish prostitutes and Yahoo Americans with your little flag lapel pins. On the other hand, the Japanese haven't acted up much since the last, say, 64 years. Fortunately, our sailors don't wait around for Obama to save them when Somali pirates boarded their ship this week. Stop right now, or I'll ask the UN to remind the international community that the U.S. is at war with Somali pirates. Gun-toting Americans are clearly more self-sufficient than sissy Europeans. This is great news for everyone except Barney Frank, who's always secretly wondered what it would be like to be taken by a Somali pirate. Again, this is Ann Coulter. Police, whom I gather liberals intend to continue having guns, are intrepid UN resolution drafters. It can't be everywhere all the time. If a single civilian in the Binghamton Community Center had been armed, instead of 14 dead, there might have only been one or two, including the shooter. In the end, the cops didn't stop Wong. His killing spree ended only when he decided to stop and killed himself. The shooter will eventually run out of ammo. The shooter will eventually run out of ammo. Strategy may not be the best one for stopping deranged multiple murderers. But it's highly unlikely that any community center in the entire state would be safer from a disturbed former crack addict like Wong, because New York's restrictive gun laws require a citizen to prove he has a need for a gun to obtain a concealed carry permit. Instead of having Planned Parenthood distribute condoms in schools, they ought to get the NRA to pass out revolvers. It would save more lives. Democrat House Speaker Nancy Pelosi dropped a verbal bombshell. By the way, we're moving on now. Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi dropped a verbal bombshell in the middle of an interview on Good Morning America on April 7th. And surprisingly, neither the press nor a majority of gun rights activists seemed to notice. Okay. Responding to a question from ABC's Robin Roberts, Pelosi said that while Congress apparently does not want to take anyone's guns away, quote, we want them registered. Robert says, under the Bush administration, you pretty much said that the ball was in the court, was in their court, when it came to reinstating the ban. Now it's a Democratic president, a Democratic House. So is the ball in your court where this is concerned? Pelosi says, yes, it is. And we're just going to have to work together to come to some resolution, because the court, in the meantime, in recent months, the Supreme Court has ruled in a direction that gives more opportunity for people to have guns. We never denied that right. We don't want to take away their guns. We want them registered. We don't want them crossing state lines. So here it is. There's already gun laws on the books. The courts already made their decision. Yet they still, Nancy Pelosi and the rest of these goofballs on Capitol Hill and in the White House, still want to pass some sort of law to compromise between their anti-gun agenda and what the court has ruled. The laws are already on the books. If you'll enforce them, you'll do better. If you try to get the educational system at least up to par, it is so subpar, it's ridiculous. Maybe you'd have the opportunity to start getting better citizens in this country from a younger age. The problem starts when they're young and their influences are negative and they don't get taught properly. They don't learn properly. And their parents are not good parents. We've got to start somewhere. I attribute this, folks, to the hippie movement back in the 60s. Because that's when it's, oh, you know what, forget about our parents and our grandparents. We're going to sit around and smoke weed and drop acid. Woo-hoo, get it on, out in the fields. Make love, not war, and have no responsibility whatsoever. And we're going to screw, and we're going to have kids, and we're going to raise them into our ideological belief like a bunch of ignorant morons. And they're going to smoke weed and do nothing. And they're going to have kids, too. What a wonderful world this will be. Look at the world we've got now. We've got second and third generation from parents and grandparents that were like that. So these kids don't know any better. These now adults don't know any better. Second and third generation from a bunch of acid-dropping potheads back in the 60s and early 70s that could give a damn about being productive in society. They found their way into society generations ago. It's going to take us generations to recover. But damn it, we need to start now. If during the oil embargo back in the early 70s, we as a nation had said, you know what, we're going to put a national effort, all of our national industry, towards ending our dependency on foreign oil. We'd have done it years ago. It would have been done in the 90s. Could you imagine if it took 25 years, a quarter century, to find the answer? It would have been done in the late 90s, 10 years ago. We'd already have this handled. And then 9/11 probably would have never happened because the Saudis who financed this whole deal wouldn't have had the money because we wouldn't have had to been buying their oil. It wouldn't be worth much because we'd be independent. They'd have all the oil in the world at $6 a barrel. Forget them. If we want a better society, we've got to start now with the kids. If the parents don't know any better, and in a lot of cases they don't, kids don't come with manuals. And if parents weren't raised good when they were children, and if their parents weren't raised good when they were children, you got nobody to fall back on. You're not good, your parents aren't good, their parents aren't good. Who's going to raise this kid properly? Your version of proper is oftentimes not going to be acceptable. You're going to turn out dirtbag kids that turn into criminals. We need to stop this. All criminals have parents somewhere, or a lack thereof. We've got to start with them younger. We've got to get this together. It starts with the educational system in your hometown. It doesn't start at the federal government and trickle its way down. All right? It starts at your level, and it goes up. Why do you think kids that go to private schools have less criminal effect than those who go to public schools? Because the private schools hold themselves to a higher standard. More when we return from the break. Stay tuned right here on Republic Broadcasting.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, welcome back from the break, folks. I want to read to you something that was good. I talked last week about this just scumbag governor in Virginia by the number of Tim Kaine, who ran for office in 2005, was elected under a huge premise of being pro-gun, claimed that Charlton Heston supported him and he was the Second Amendment man. And the Virginia state legislature sent him 5 pro-gun, pro-self-defense bills, all of which he vetoed. So after the regular session, what happens is they go back and they vote on all the bills that have been vetoed to see if they can have a majority support to override them. Here's the information. On Wednesday, April 8th, the General Assembly overrode Governor Tim Kaine's veto of 2 pro-gun bills. Senate Bill 877 will allow retired law enforcement officers to carry concealed in a restaurant that serves alcoholic beverages. Unlike Senate Bill 1035, the bill applies only to retired law enforcement officers. The Senate voted to override the governor by a vote of 30-10, while the House voted 76-22 to override. Senate Bill 1528 will allow a safer course required for obtaining a concealed handgun permit conducted by a state-certified or NRA-certified firearms instructor to be done electronically or online. The Senate voted 28-12 to override, and the House concurred at 73-23. Unfortunately, the Senate failed to override the veto of Senate Bill 1035 and House Bill 1851, as well as House Bill 2528. Senate Bill 1035 would have permitted a right to carry permit holder to carry concealed in a restaurant, provided that they did not consume alcohol. The bill failed to pass by 24-6 vote in the Senate, just a few shy. House Bill 1851 would have exempted active duty military personnel or Virginia National Guardsmen from Virginia's 1-gun-a-month law on handgun purchases. House Bill 1851, which passed the House in the override session by a vote of 73-26, failed the Senate by 26-14. You need 27 for an override, so it lost by one. And then House Bill 2528, would have established that no locality or entity may participate in a gun buyback program where individuals are given anything of value or money in exchange for surrender of a firearm to the locality unless the governing body first passes an ordinance authorizing the gun buyback. The legislation also required that the locality holding gun buybacks sell the firearms to a federally licensed dealer or be disposed of in any appropriate manner if they could not be sold. So that would be sold first. That was the first attempt. House Bill 2528 passed the House 71-28, but only defeated in the Senate by a vote of 24-16. So we got a couple back in Virginia. Thank you. It's been a great show. I thank you very much, folks, for tuning in. You can always send me your comments, bill@2aradio.com. Thank you, and have a wonderful rest of the day. Tune in to Dave Champion at 3 p.m. Central. Bye-bye.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.